My name's Adele Onyango, and welcome to another episode of Legally Clueless. No, seriously, I have no clue what I'm doing, but I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. Hey you, welcome to episode 220, damn it. Welcome to the fam. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, audio episodes like this go out every single Monday, and you can catch this podcast everywhere you get your podcasts on. And also check out our website, which is legallycluelessafrica.com. Once you're there, you can sign up to join our community. You can watch our tour series, watch our video series. That's pretty popping. And of course, stay updated on when our next events are going to be. We have another event coming up in June, so I would, if I were you, sign up to join the community so you don't get left out of it. If you are an OG member of the fam, I really do appreciate you. I have so much love for you. And as usual, join us on our warm, fuzzy corner of the internet. We're on Instagram at Legally Clueless Africa, and on TikTok, we're at Legally Clueless Africa as well. Links to all of our socials are in the show notes. All right. I'm super excited because finally the Hyper Independence episode is here. I have been working on it for a while. It's a term that I met in therapy, and just unpacking it and where it stems from for me, I thought it was very important to have an entire episode in it. A little later, I roped in one of my friends who happens to be a counseling psychologist. Her name is Daisy. And yeah, I roped her in to kind of just unpack things in a way that I am not skilled enough to do. And she's talking about hyper-independence in relationships. Wait, I will listen to this.
Hyper-independent people, most of them usually have the avoidant type of relationship attachment. So if you're this person, chances are you will attract someone who is overly clingy, because usually the insecure attachment styles attract each other. So the avoidant would always attract the anxious. And the anxious is this person who is very clingy and they want to be in your space so much. It's also important that you let your partner know that in case they are too clingy, it causes you frustration. It triggers your shame or even agitation or even guilt. Also, it's very important that as a hyper-independent person, you avoid codependent relationships. What does a codependent relationship look like? It looks like others are responsible for your feelings, and also that you are responsible for other people's feelings.
That is Daisy, and we're going to be jumping into that topic in a bit. But first, the song of the week. I cannot believe it's taken me this long to share this particular song or spoken word or piece. And it's by my favorite poet, Titi Lope, someone who I was fortunate enough to work with, I think, in 2015. That was when I first met her and then got introduced to her work. I was the Kenyan ambassador for one of Intel's programs, and she was the Nigerian ambassador. And so she came over to Kenya for a bit and we hung out. And then I just got hooked on her poetry. The poet in me loves her poetry. She has a body of work called Swim, and in it is a poem called 10 Things. And in this poem, she kind of like goes through, I want to call them like 10 lessons she's collected over her life. And it's kind of presented like a music stroke poetry stroke spoken word piece, of which I've put a link to in the show notes. Please, if there's one thing I want you to do is listen to that. Trust me, you'll find at least one of the 10 things that she shares to speak to you. I promise you that. I'm going to read you a few lines from it though. And so the piece starts like this. 10 things somebody should have taught me. 1, do not romanticize suffering. There's nothing poetic about a love that breaks your spirit. 2, know when to leave. Some bridges need to be burned. Use the light to find a better way. 3, practice forgiveness. Start with yourself. Nobody actually ever forgets. Remember the lesson. Okay, I wasn't going to share all of them, but okay, let me see. Maybe I'll get to 6. All right. So 4, say no. Do not negotiate with terrorists. Do not bargain for anyone's love. 5, friendships end. Let go, stay open. Titi Lopez, that one. 6, save emotional real estate for the ones that will stay. Be soft, be a safe place for the ones you love. Okay, you know what? You have to listen to the entire, I really want to share all 10 because I identify with all of them. But in the show notes, there's a link to the piece. Go and listen to it. It's 10 Things by Titi Lope. All right, finally, the Hyper Independence episode is here. Man, I first met this term eons ago in therapy. I've always aspired to be independent, especially when it comes to money. What I used to do would say the reason I'm hyper independent around finances is it's important for a woman to be financially independent because financial abuse is a thing. Now, this is true, but it wasn't the truth that my independence was based on. So in therapy, as we dug deeper, the first spark of where my hyper independence was born was coming from the day my mom left my dad. So my Uncle Peter, remember the Uncle Peter episode? Unfortunately, we lost him last year. He was a lawyer. Whenever anyone in the family had any legal shenanigans, they would rush to him, and he was always so gracious with helping us. Him and my mom's cousins and siblings arrived at our house where we stayed with, you know, my mom, dad, and my siblings. And at the time, only my dad was there. We had moved out a few days before after what was probably the most and the worst violent episode by my dad. It was the final fight. And yeah, when it happened, I think it happened during the school holidays because my sisters and I then went to stay with another uncle whose kids were close in age to us. And while we were away, I guess the adults were planning this whole thing. So the troop led by my Uncle Peter arrived at the house. My dad was there and served my dad with divorce papers. And then they proceeded to take everything from the house. I think the only thing they left was a cooker, I believe. Turns out my mom had bought everything, and the accountant that she was, she had nearly all her receipts. And it's just so funny because there's so many households like that where the mother figure is the one who is providing and paying, etc. But then because of cultural gender roles, almost, this is not made public knowledge. It's almost like hidden. Anyway, I don't know if you relate with that. But I remember either, I don't know how I learned about this. Actually, I do remember how I learned about this. There is an aunt who told me about it. And in hindsight, I just feel like I was too young for her to be telling me these things. The more I think about conversations I had with this particular aunt, they were really geared towards getting me to dislike my dad, which even from a young age, I was aware that his actions were wrong, but that I could still give him grace and love and still be incredibly giving of love to my mom. I didn't have to choose one side. Like, all of these three things could coexist. Yeah, I don't know. Really questioning that aunt's intentions, honestly. But anyway, so that's how I learned about it. And I think my subconscious takeaway wasn't even that he, dislike your dad or whatever. I mean, part of me felt a bit sad for him because I was just like, man, then now he was alone. But I subconsciously took away that I will never financially depend on someone else, especially men, because what if they, just like my dad, disappointed me? That kind of was running in my subconscious without me consciously knowing. And so that was where the hyper independence was birthed. And I still say it to date. I really don't know how to ask for money. And granted, capitalism in some ways rewards hyper independence because you end up working really hard. So, you know, knock on wood, I've not been in a situation where I've needed to financially depend on someone. But I think that was really where it was born. Now, after we left my dad, we moved in with my aunt, and that was here in Nairobi. And so my aunt had two uncles also living there, but they were in and out of Nairobi. This wasn't their base base. So the house was really my aunt's base. And I have always had a very strained relationship with this particular aunt. She's just always been very mean, and not just to me, to like, I want to say everyone in the family. And I just didn't like how she spoke about my mom. And I didn't like how she was not helpful to my mom, but was telling everyone how she's the one taking care of my mom financially, etc., when she wasn't. And I remember once, right after my mom left my dad and we'd moved in with her, she told me that I should just go back to my dad's people. And I can never forget that. It's so crazy. It's come up in therapy quite a few times. And I've tried so hard to release that particular memory. I don't feel resentment towards her over it, which is progress, but I can't release the memory, right? And it's funny how I was pretty young then, maybe I was about 10 years old, but I remember what she was wearing. I remember what I was wearing. I remember where we were standing in the house when she said it. I remember how it felt. And again, I think subconsciously, I decided never to rely on people, because obviously at the time, I didn't know my mom was basically footing every bill and contributing, etc. And I was just like, this woman can say these things to me because we're reliant on her in this moment. Subconsciously, I kind of made a deal with myself that we would never be in that situation ever again. Now, years later, I confronted this aunt and I told her, you know, do you remember when I was this old, you told me these words? And she was like, oh, you were a kid. That was such a long time ago. And the apology that I squeezed out of her in that moment was extremely far from legit. It's just like, but I'm kind of happy for that experience, because it taught me that healing from specific events or from specific things people have said and done to you cannot be reliant on them acknowledging the pain they inflicted and apologizing. Sometimes, in fact, most times, you will have to heal without the closure, without the apology, without all of that. And so I kind of learned that through that particular experience. So in a way, she kind of gifted me something. I mean, there were other times that I want to say we as a family, but even I as an individual relied on people and they let me down. And I just think subconsciously I decided, let me tell you, I'm not going to rely on anyone, not only financially, but also emotionally. Now with my business, man, it's been difficult. It's been difficult. I've relied on people in my career, say like having management in my career. And for the longest time, I thought that was so necessary. Some were a delight to work with, others weren't. And just like a sidebar, I think even in terms of management in careers with a certain amount of public whatever. What is the word I'm looking for? Yeah, careers that are in the public. When it comes to management, I think you should design models for the economic environment you're in. So you can't take a model that works, say, in the States or in South Africa and apply it as is in Kenya. We're a different economic environment. You've got to kind of look at what economic space you're playing in, and then what is your long-term plan as well. My long-term plan in building something that outlives me and is not based on me being present requires a different model. It requires a more traditional media business model. So whereas I was having all of these managers and being signed on to management companies, what I needed to be doing is building a business structure of my own. But at the time, I wasn't too clear on that. And so I think I've had three or two managers across my career. And as I said, some were delighted to work with, others weren't. Man, I once had a particular individual try go behind my back and sabotage a particular partnership I was just getting into. I think that just confounded my previous core beliefs that I had created based on past trauma. And so I, you know, when you trust someone and then they let you down, I then go back to that core belief of like, you see, this is why we're hyper independent. This is why we do everything ourselves, because once you trust someone, they're going to pull some bullshit like this, right? Even though in that moment, it's not that I've been trusting horrible people only. There have been some great people I've trusted, but that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for evidence to back my hyper independence. And even if it's 1 in 10 encounters have proven to be untrustworthy, that's the one I'm going with. I don't want to hear about the other 9. So I have been having a hard time trusting anyone in my business. Very, very difficult. I just have to say it. I think I've said it even before on the podcast. Last year, I think I intentionally promised myself that I need to consciously choose courage in all aspects of my life. And so what that meant in business is I roped in a sales rep. I conducted interviews. I shortlisted 2 people. One of them wanted not a sales role, but to be more in the day-to-day. And I was just like, I'm not ready. That one, no. And so I roped in 2 sales reps and someone to lead our workshop divisions. And recently, like in the past 2 weeks, recently, the person who is kind of working on our workshops, they took on a meeting for a partnership without me. Yes. Can you imagine? And I didn't bug them to brief me immediately they were done. No. And I even encouraged them to give their opinion when they were kind of briefing me on how the meeting went and asking what my thoughts were on some of the things that came up. I said, you know, this is a democracy and I'm giving you the power to share your opinion and your thoughts are welcome here so that we jointly make a decision. And I felt so proud of myself. This is such progress for me. Obviously, the person that, you know, I've chosen to work with is pretty awesome. But on an individual level as myself, it's just like, wow, babe, go you. Relationships. Oh my goodness. Hyper independence. My hyper independence thrives in my relationships. Where? I think it's only in the last year that I've consciously, again, I told you, I've consciously chosen courage in all aspects of my life. And this includes even relationships, which include friendships, by the way. I almost never share when I'm not okay. And when I do, I'll do it in passing. Like even the biggest of deals of things, I'll share them in passing and then quickly sweep them under the rug. And it doesn't matter if this is a good thing that has happened or a bad thing that has happened. It's crazy because then I get shocked when I'm trying to hint that I'm not okay. The friends or loved ones, etc., just don't get it. You know, it just then frustrates me. But I'm also not being clear because I don't want to rely on nobody. It's difficult, right? It's difficult. But in the last year, I have learned how to lean on those who love me. Again, I've intentionally started grasping at courage. So in the last year, I leaned on the people who I was sure in my heart loved me and loved me the way I wanted to be loved. And not just that, the people who saw me. One of the most important things in any type of relationship is for someone to feel seen. It doesn't matter whether it's a workplace, whether you're a team leader, whether it's friendship or intimate relationships. It's to feel seen. And that's only happened for me in the last year. And now is when I'm like, oh, okay, that's a big deal. That's important. Do you see me? Even before you start telling me, sweet my lovings, do you see me? And I leaned into relationships where I felt seen. I remember going through something heartbreaking and my friend Kamal called me. Just out of the blue, she just happened to call me and that was a bad day. I could not get out of bed. Emotionally, I was not okay. I was sick. It's like flus just know when to come. She asked me if I was okay, and I broke down crying on the phone, and we both cried, and I felt so good after that call. I felt seen. I felt cared for. I felt stronger. You know, the process of shedding and not fighting to be this hyper-independent person was a process that ended up building me, made me stronger. Even though we tend to be hyper-independent thinking that's stronger, but opening up and letting people be there for you is the real strength, and it actually allows you to feel fuller, especially if you do it in a space where you feel loved and you feel seen. I remember when my uncle Peter died, I called my best friend Katsu and I cried whilst sharing with her Uncle Peter's last messages to me. On that call, I was crying one moment and then I was laughing. And I didn't realize that was exactly what I needed. I remember on that same day, I just felt so down. I was like, why is this guy gone? You know, I chatted my partner and I said, I don't think I want to be alone today. And they were there for me. It took me 10 years, first and foremost, to send that message because where? How am I admitting that I need to rely on someone? Hey. But I did, and I felt held together. And recently, when I got some good news, I called Kadzo again and we celebrated together, you know. So I've adopted this in all my relationships, a brave, honest approach of sharing when I'm down and what I'm down about, and when I'm happy, what I'm happy about. So let's cry together, yes, but let's celebrate together as well. And I think I realized that I shouldn't let my past, be it traumatic events or people who have let me down, dictate my future. That is giving them too much power. And it feels so, so good to let people love on me. And it doesn't take away from my independence. The two can coexist. It doesn't have to be one extreme. So I didn't only want to share my experience with hyper-independence. I also wanted to bring in someone who I think is skilled, first and foremost, and can unpack it and maybe give us some more tips on how, if you are noticing some streaks of hyper-independence, you can start figuring out where it came from. How can you reflect? What are some exercises that can help? You know, all of that good stuff. So I got my friend Daisy to join us. And I think the first thing I wanted to know is the definition of hyper-independence. Let's start there.
So I would define hyperindependence as a trauma response or a stress response that causes people to feel like they have to do things on their own. It comes from somewhere. So that's why we are calling it a trauma response. Therefore, this causes people to feel like they have to be independent. They have to do things on their own. The main thought behind this is that they are protecting their safety. So hyperindependence is causes people to have that feeling that they have to do things alone, on their own.
In therapy, one of the things that came up for me was that there was probably a time in my life where as a family, we had to rely on someone, and individually, I relied on a family member. In your experience and your expertise, where did hyper-independence stem from? What births it?
So I have come to really have dealing with issues, childhood trauma, because I'm also one who has been through childhood trauma and I know the impact. So hyper-independence is one impact of childhood trauma. In case as a child, as you grew up, probably your needs were neglected. You had to depend on yourself for most things. And so for that reason, you became hyper-independent for yourself. So you had to learn how to get your needs. You had to know how to deal with your own emotional needs. And so this led you to only and only depend on yourself. Also, it could stem from the past where you depended on people and they let you down. I think that goes for you, Adele, in the example that you gave, when you had to solely or completely depend on people and then they let you down. So you suffered a disappointment, and for that reason, you decided moving forward, you would not ever depend on any other people. I would like also to talk about the inner beliefs. Core beliefs are basic beliefs that people have about themselves. Usually we feel like that is the absolute truth about ourselves. Deep down, especially in the subconscious, we feel like that is what we believe ourselves. So for a hyper-independent person, the core beliefs usually is the fear of losing their sense of self. They're afraid that they would lose their sense of self. They're also afraid of the loss of independence. They're afraid that when they depend on other people, they would lose their independence. There's also the fear of loss of freedom. They fear that depending on other people would mean that they are now losing their freedom. One of the other main core beliefs is that they fear loss of safety. So they feel while depending on other people, they will lose their safety, which stems back to the childhood where their experiences depending on other people meant that they have lost their safety. Because they depended on, for example, their mother to provide their needs and they didn't, they stayed hungry. So for that reason, they feel like their needs will not be met even in adulthood when they depend on other people.
You know, the thing that I'm beginning to understand now is how formative years are. Your childhood years, there's so much that influences, like what you've talked about, your core beliefs. You don't really confront that. Well, I've never confronted that outside of therapies when I was like, oh, crap. Like, yeah, that came from this time in my childhood. What are some examples of how hyper-independent people, how you can identify that you're hyper-independent? Because if you have developed this, well, I think for me, you developed this persona out of survival and then it becomes your norm. So then it's so hard to identify it because it's like, I've always been like this. And it's always celebrated by society. You're very independent. You don't rely on anybody, blah, blah, blah. So it's hard to identify that this is not a healthy thing.
Okay. So hyper-independent people have a few things that they can show them that they are actually hyper-independent. Number one is that they find it very hard to seek for help. It is very hard for them to ask for help even when it is evident that they actually should. These people also refuse to get help when they are offered. You get in the office, there is so much work to do. They need help, but they would just take in more tasks because it is hard for them to accept any help from any other people. These people are the perfectionists. As a society, we sometimes portray perfectionism as something really nice. But you know, perfectionists judge other people based on their own set impossible standards. It stems from a negative thinking pattern that we call polarizing, where you often feel like you have to do the best. And the best is never enough. You have to keep on doing more. So hyper-independent people are perfectionists most times. They're unable to delegate. At work, they have to take up all the tasks. They feel like they need to take up everything because of the fear that they'll be let down by people if they delegate tasks. These people sometimes are portrayed as selfish and self-focused. Because they like to keep things to themselves. They individualize even material things. People perceive them as selfish because of the fear that sharing things would mean disappointment for them. And then also they take up so many tasks. So because they can't ask for help, neither can they delegate. They also find that they take up too many tasks, more than even they can even manage. Yeah, so if you have some of these signs, probably you're a very hyper-independent person. And usually it shows so much in romantic relationships, because then you find that you're with someone who loves you and probably wants to get sometimes into your space. Most hyper-independent people find that they carry the avoidant type of attachment. They don't like people getting so much into their space because they fear that they might lose their independence.
First and foremost, like the stuff you were talking about earlier in terms of like work, tasks, delegation. I literally was holding my head because I was like, so you just say my name then. Like, come at me straight. Don't come at me through corners. Because I really do struggle with that. Like, I think, and sometimes even the tasks I set for myself are unattainable, or the deadlines. It's like, you know, this is going to be difficult. Like, what are you doing? You know, maybe let's explore more in terms of like relationships, right? Maybe if you have other ways that hyper independence manifests in intimate relationships, you can share. But then how does one start to, in that setting, let people in?
Mm-hmm. So I've also mentioned that hyper independent people, usually most of them usually have the avoidant type of relationship attachment, where they usually want to have their space in relationships. So if you're this person, chances are you will attract someone who is overly clingy, because usually the insecure attachment styles attract each other. So the avoidant would always attract the anxious, and the anxious is this person who is very clingy and they want to be in your space so much. So for if you're in such a relationship, it's very important that you understand yourself, understand where this is coming from, understand what being an avoidant is, understand what it is to be an hyper-independent person. And also, as you do that, please understand where it stems from. So this would involve you going back to your past, probably a disappointment, probably your childhood trauma. It would be important that you understand where it stems from, so that as you try to work through it, you also help your partner understand that you're like this because in the past something like this happened. And also probably when you notice that this is happening, it's also important that you let your partner know that in case they are too clingy, it causes you frustration. It triggers your shame or even agitation or even guilt. So it's very important that you notice and understand yourself, self-awareness, be able to know where it stems from, be able to understand what happened and led you to being hyper-independent. And once you do that, it's also important that you now start to work through it. Work through trust issues. It is very important to know that there's no pain in being vulnerable. It's not a lack of safety when you are vulnerable. It does not mean that you're exposing yourself to danger. Learning to be able to understand this and like try and work it out. Just like you've said, Adele, delegating part of your work was a big win for someone who is hyper independent. It takes you to sometimes allow people into your space. And as you do that, you will notice that you'll now get out of the survival mode that you have been by your hyper-independence. So allowing people sometimes into your space, slowly by slowly, I know it will take time before you fully are able to even delegate, but that one step is a big way to go. Also, it's very important that as a hyper-independent person, you avoid codependent relationships. What does a codependent relationship look like? It looks like others are responsible for your feelings, and also that you are responsible for other people's feelings. So if you're a hyper-independent person, getting into a codependent relationship would be very hard for you, because then this person would want to be so much into your space. They'd want so much attention from you, which would otherwise drain you. So it's important that you don't get into relationships that are codependent. Healthy relationships are interdependent. So if you're already in one of such a relationship of a codependent relationship, it's important that both of you work towards interdependence, where your autonomy is maintained, but also you are fully available for your partner. Also, as a hyper-independent person, it's very important that you work towards changing your core beliefs. This can be done through therapy, especially cognitive behavioral therapy, which can take you through your core beliefs so that you're able to work through them and change that core belief that you when you lose your independence, when you become hyper-independent, you're protecting yourself from losing independence. So it's very important that you also work through these core beliefs and enable yourself like to work through them.
This is so interesting. Oh, man, I have two questions. So the first one is a selfish one because it's a good question for me. Because I think I have an anxious attachment style, but I'm still hyper independent, which is like a bit of a contrast. Does that ever happen or am I an alien?
It does happen. So like I said, usually insecure attachment styles stem from our past and mostly our childhood. So where your relationship with your primary caregiver had some issues, so you developed either trust issues or you became over-independent on yourself. So it is possible that you're also very hyper-independent and also anxious because of probably you experienced both sides of it during your childhood. You either went through neglect or you went through abuse. Or sometimes even the experiences that we have as we get into relationships, even in adulthood, sometimes they could lead you to developing a certain attachment style. It's not a written phrase that if you're a hyper-independent, you're for sure an avoidant. It is possible that hyper-independent people attach insecurely though. And yes, it's very important that this is looked into.
And how can you, for example, if you are, I want us to finish with relationships and then we'll go into the workplace, because I think that's also a breeding ground. But like, if you are dating or in a relationship with somebody who's hyper independent, what's the best way to support them in this journey while still taking care of you?
Mm-hmm. That's a nice question. So in the instance you're dating a hyper-independent person, you realize they don't take acts of service they don't welcome acts of service as a love language. When you're dating such a person, it's important that you understand them. So first, do your research on what hyper-independence is. Also realize that they had a hard situation. Probably they're dealing with something they've not even been able to share with you. So dealing with them with compassion, allowing them space, and also showing that you're also ready to help them. So you can suggest that you want to help them. In the instance they say no, you communicate that you feel like helping them would go a long way in you showing love to them. But also it's important that you also allow them space so that they can have the time to work on what made them hyper-independent in the first place. And also it's very important that you do not become overly clingy to these people. Show them that you're ready to work with them, you're ready to help them, but also allow them to notice that it's important that they work work on the hyper-independence themselves.
That's true. Now, I feel like when we talk about hyper-independence in the workplace, in my experience, why it's difficult to pinpoint is because it's celebrated. Because it's good to some extent, it's good for the business, depending on the nature of your job. And then also, how do you spot it? How does it manifest in the workplace? And once it does, what do you do? Because not everybody has a boss they can talk to about these things. You know, they'll just be like, what do you mean hyper-independence? Can you just do your work? How do you spot it? And what do you do then?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So at the workplace, it shows by you taking in too many tasks. When you simply can't say no to tasks because you feel like you have to achieve so much to protect yourself, to keep yourself safe. It could also show in you trying to overachieve. When you're taking in so many tasks and you want to do them all perfectly, this could be a sign that you're having hyper-independence. Also, when you have a problem delegating, you're the one just taking all the tasks and people bring all the tasks and you keep on taking them. This could also show that you're hyper-independent. Also, hyper-independence, because you have to take in so many tasks at the workplace, it would show by you constantly being stressed and burnt out. When you're constantly having to do everything at the office, you'd end up being stressed and also it could cause a burnout. So these people struggle so much with the delegating, and therefore it causes burnout. Also, when you have so much mistrust for other people at the office, you always feel like people are scheming. So for that, you can't delegate, you can't work as a team. You feel like you need to do everything so that you safeguard your position. This also might be a sign of hyper-independence. Also, when you're very secretive, you want to keep everything to yourself. You don't want to share. And these are matters about your workplace. You feel like when you share, it will allow people into your space. Also, this could be a sign of hyper-independence. So how do you deal with this at the workplace? So this would show mostly hyper-independent people come to realize that they have been hyper-independent when now it is stressful, when now the work has become too much and they are constantly stressed, they are constantly burnt out, they are overworking at the office. So when you notice that you're a hyper-independent person, it's important that you learn yourself how to put up good boundaries, healthy boundaries at work. This might involve you learning how to say no, not to some tasks, because a hyper-independent person will always say yes to everything they're given because they feel like they need to take in all the tasks to safeguard themselves. So learning to say no and putting up healthy boundaries at work. Also, as you do this, it's important that you deal with any past issues that you may be having. You need to create a healthy lifestyle for yourself. That might involve you seeing a professional or having practice healthy mental health practices that will enable you to soothe yourself. And then instead of taking in more tasks as a way of soothing yourself, it's very important as a hyper-independent person to also learn other good ways to soothe yourself. So rather than taking in more tasks, avoiding delegation and being overly overworked at the workplace, you can learn some other better ways to soothe yourself, like journaling, writing a letter to your inner child, expressing the needs they met. You could also reparent yourself. Reparenting yourself, which means generally just giving yourself what you missed as a child to enable you to soothe yourself, instead of soothing yourself with the negative ways like taking in too many tasks.
That's really interesting. I'd never seen the process of taking too many tasks as a way of soothing yourself. So we talked about hyper-independence in relationships, intimate romantic relationships, and in the workspace. What other spheres in our lives do you think it pops up and could cause an issue?
Interesting. In friendships, hyper-independent people in friendships wouldn't want friends to assist them. They obviously are going through a tough time, probably in their lives, but they would want to keep secrets to themselves, even in friendships. They want their friends to look at them like they have it all, that they can manage it all. So they do not get vulnerable in friendships.
Okay, so for the people listening, and you know you're hyper-independent, what are some immediate steps? Like, let's say you don't have access to a therapist. What are some immediate steps, practical tips, exercises that can help someone start to reverse this? Start to learn how to say no at the workplace. Start to open up to their partner and say, I'm like this, maybe because of this. Or even start to reflect on their childhood and be like, where the heck did I learn this?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a good way to do that is to start by writing a letter to your inner child. This will help you notice what the inner child feels. I always tell my clients that your inner child is alive. She or he is in there and she keeps on coming out. Sometimes she's a limitation. Sometimes she's a strength. So it's very important that you advocate for the inner child. So write a letter to this child. Talk to her about how it was and how you felt. As a child, you fully depended on your caregivers. And if they didn't fully provide your needs, then it led to some limitations. So talk to the inner child. Anytime you feel like you're afraid of being vulnerable, it's very important that the inner voice be advocating for the inner child. Speak to this inner child and tell them that it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay for you to ask for help. It's okay for you to get support. That even though as a child you didn't experience that, you can actually experience that as an adult, because regardless, you're an adult now. Right now, you're capable of providing for yourself. Right now, you're strong enough to defend yourself. Therefore, you can actually be the main advocate for the inner child. Talk to her, address her when you in times when you feel like you need to be to do things solo. Also, a good way to do is to journal every day. Every day is a learning process. As you experience hyperindependence, say that the workplace, say that home, it's important that you journal. This will enable you to put your thoughts onto paper and therefore notice why and how you behaved in a certain way, and help you to actually behave better when the same situation reoccurs. Also, just like I said, get better ways to soothe yourself. This might involve you. You can start by getting one person you trust that you get really vulnerable with from time to time. It could be a friend. It could be your romantic partner. Allow them into your space slowly by slowly, being vulnerable to this one person. And as you do that and see that you're getting yourself out of your comfort or your survival mode, then in the future, you would be able to even learn how to trust other people. It is also very important that you be able to advocate for your emotions. Emotions are valid. It's very important that you validate your emotions. So anytime you feel like you have like negative emotions or positive emotions, it's important that you be able to advocate for them. Find out, why am I feeling this way? A good way to do that is still through writing. Find out why you felt the way you felt. Instead of pushing your emotions down to the subconscious, it's important that you learn how to advocate for them in the right ways and address them in the right ways. Also in the decision making, because hyper-independent people always like to make their own decisions, it's important as a hyper-independent person, especially at the workplace, you could start with decisions that do not just involve you. For example, decisions that are to be made regarding work, you could start by involving other people. Allow other people to share instead of fully depending on yourself to make the decisions and coming up with decisions without involving other people. This will help you to progress. As you do that, probably in the future, you'd be able to allow other people also to help you in decision making.
Yeah, and I love the bit about advocating for your emotions, and they're valid and they come from somewhere. So Daisy, there's two things that maybe I should have done at the beginning. But one is maybe you could share the work that you do, and I think it's so important. You know, all of this great information, and maybe it's important to share how you know it.
How
everybody listening can kind of like get in contact with you.
Okay. I'm Daisy Hindi. I'm a counseling psychologist. I'm trained and licensed by the Kenyan Psychological Association. I'm the lead counselor of an organization called ConvoCare Kenya. ConvoCare Kenya does mental health advocacy. We do individual therapy, group therapy, and currently we are also doing couples therapy. I have had many success stories on childhood trauma because I think it's part of my, I have experience in it, and I also went through it as a child. And therefore, I have many, many of my success stories on childhood trauma. But I am a holistic therapist, which necessarily means that in my therapy, I use different approaches to help the client through their individual problems. We are available on all social media platforms. On Instagram, that is our main channel where you can get information. We have available content on Instagram at convocare.ke_counseling.
Do you do virtual individual therapy as well?
Yes, we do both physical and virtual individual therapy.
I hope there is something you've taken away from this episode and from Daisy. I have put a link in the show notes to the ConvoCare Instagram page. I always tag them on my Instagram. I love Daisy's very soft approach to healing. It's very human. I have a friend who was going to therapy with Daisy and she just absolutely loved her experience. So again, in case you're kind of looking for where to kickstart your healing journey, you're looking for a therapist or even just content, because they are really good in giving bite-sized content around issues that we deal with on a day-to-day, ConvoCare is an Instagram page you should be following. Okay, if you're in Kenya, remember you can catch this podcast on Trace FM every single Monday and Wednesday. We're there at 1 p.m. and 11 p.m. And on Fridays, we're there at 1 p.m. Check out our website, legallycluelessafrica.com. Sign up to be part of our community. And you know what? I think this week, what I'm going to leave you with is courage. It's one of my favorite spoken word pieces that talks about go bravely. And I just love those two words. And so as you start every day this week, go bravely, intentionally choose courage in everything that you do, in everything that you're trying to navigate, and especially in this journey of healing, so that you can fully unlock the big life that's not just only waiting for you, but that you are so deserving of having. That's it for this episode of Legally Clueless. You can share this podcast with your friends. You can keep it for yourself. I'm not judging. Just make sure you're here next week for the next episode.